Headlines.
From Washington, D.C., the capital of the divided states of America, it's time for the show that brings you both sides of the issues that really matter. I am Republican investigative reporter Lee Stranahan on the right.
And I'm Mike Hirsch, Progressive Democrats of America, National Communications Director here over on the left.
It's time for the most disruptive radio show in America. It's Fault Lines with Nixon and Stranahan, guest hosted this week by Mike Hirsch. Big show for you today. I don't know if you caught this thing in the news about North Korea, but Mike and I will be discussing it in round one. As the sabers rattle between Pyongyang and Washington, we'll be discussing what's really going on and how did this whole story actually drop, stuff you won't be getting anywhere else. In round two, we'll be discussing Paul Manafort. Again, perhaps you heard this in the news. Paul Manafort, it turns out, had his home raided. We'll be discussing the Manafort smoke and mirrors. And again, giving you information you're not going to get on any other media outlet. Finally, in round three, have neoconservatives become addicted to regime change? We'll discuss how they've been dealing with regime change in places like Syria, Ukraine, Iraq, Iran, Libya, Afghanistan. I'm already tired of mentioning all these countries. We'll be talking about all of that and more on today's Fault Lines with Nixon and Stranahan. So as we went to air yesterday, this North Korea thing was just sort of breaking. And we discussed it. Mike and I discussed it.
Yep.
And my theory was things would get more heated. And we'd still have plenty to talk about today. So we kind of pushed it off until today. And sure enough, I was not disappointed.
No. Well, it depends on what you would consider disappointing. But
so there's a few things going on here. I want to discuss some of the issues with what's going on with North Korea. And let's just get the facts out there first.
Good idea.
And then when we discuss... And then, in a weird way, segment two and segment three are going to kind of meld into one another because we're going to talk about the Paul Manafort thing, this raid. And to me, you can't talk about Manafort. Literally, you can't talk about Manafort without talking about Ukraine. And then in round three, we'll talk about regime change, which affects Ukraine because the United States, I don't know if you heard this, you didn't really hear this if you were watching the media. The United States organized a coup there. So those two segments will mix in. But before we get to that, let's do the usual stuff where we tell you, hi, how's it going? If you're listening on 105.5 FM here in the swamp, welcome, everybody. Do us a favor. Tell your friends. Roll down your window. Hold your boombox up outside the window of a girl you're attracted to. I'm just going to say anything reference there,
say
Mike.
Say anything, yep.
Anything you want to, by the way, that's the worst way to meet a girl I can possibly think of.
It only works in the movies.
Yes. If you took your boombox and you played Fault Lines.
First of all, who has a boombox these days?
You know what? Actually, they have a digital, I saw this recently. I'm not joking. They have like a digital boombox now. And I'm like, that's very smart.
Yeah, I saw that there was like a Dr. Dre kind of boombox thing.
Yes. It makes perfect sense.
And it has like 28 batteries in it or something like that. And
that's right. That's the way to do it. Yeah.
It's very old school.
Yes. What they're trying to do is they're trying to single-handedly bring back the D battery market.
There you go.
By the way, let me just ask. We have a millennial here. Jack, Jack knows what a D battery is. Okay. My 16-year-old son Jack helps us out. By the way, what Jack's doing is if you want to watch the radio show, you can do that on Periscope. Jack is manning the camera. You can do it on my Periscope at Stranahan. By the way, while you're on Twitter, make sure to follow Garland Nixon, our normal co-host, and also follow Mike Hirsch at Mike Hirsch. He snagged that one early.
I got it early.
Also, you can watch us on Facebook Live. Also, if you don't catch the show live, either on Sputnik News or on 105.5 FM, you can also catch us in repeats on iTunes, where you can subscribe, on Spreaker, and a whole bunch of other ways. Okay, let's talk about North Korea.
And don't forget the app.
Don't forget the app. Yes. There's a good app. Sputnik's got a good app that lets you also listen live.
Right. No D batteries required.
That's right. Well, one,
it's modern,
technically.
It's modern.
So let's talk about this Trump-Korea kerfluffle. Is it a kerfluffle if there's
like
a nuclear threat
or
to Guam? I don't know. Is that, am I underselling it by saying kerfluffle?
It might be a cafefe, whatever that is.
So obviously North Korea has been agitating. I'll just say agitating. They've been launching missiles, you know, every week or two for months now. And South Korea is not happy about it. Japan's not happy about it. Our allies in the region are not happy about it. And the U.S. hasn't been happy about it. And we can talk about how we got here, which I think a lot of this has to do with the Clinton deal.
A lot of it has to do with the misguided policies of the Cold War, in which we dropped more munitions on North Korea than I think Europe during all of World War II. It's just an ungodly amount of bombs were dropped in North Korea, and clearly hasn't made them behave any better.
I'm talking about specifically, because I was watching video last night. The actor James Woods, who's a great conservative, posted video of Bill Clinton.
He's a better actor than he is an analyst, in my view.
Well, this wasn't even analysis. He just said, watch the video. And it was Bill Clinton in 1994 saying, basically, that we've got to deal with North Korea and the nuclear issue. It's resolved. It's all set. And South Korea is going to buy North Korea an energy system and everything else.
Right, right. I remember all that.
And so we've been hearing for a long time.
They probably made some money off of it.
Yeah.
You know, I'm just guessing. I don't know that for a fact.
Yes. And by the way, I'm not saying the Bush administration following Clinton did any better.
Or the Bush administration preceding the Clinton did any better.
That's right. Yeah. I'm saying we've been hearing for decades that North Korea is going to get nukes. North Korea is going to get nukes. And we've been assured by every administration, Republican, Democrat, doesn't make any difference, that, okay, this is the treaty. Like this one will make North Korea apply.
And have you believed in any of those treaties?
No.
Me neither.
No.
No.
And North Korea is also admittedly a weird country in that it was initially just a sort of straight communist. North Korea was communist. It was in China's orbit.
Right.
It was getting help from the Soviet Union. And
right.
Then they did this slightly weird thing where now they say they're not communist. What they did is they made it very personal and very cult of personality.
Exactly what I was going to say.
Yeah, they and the policies haven't. They're still a Maoist broadly.
The Maoism was kind of incoherent anyway.
Yeah,
and they're taking it to a whole other level of incoherence, in my opinion.
And then what they did was they grafted a family like. Patriarchy is not the word I'm looking for, but what's the word I'm looking for?
Hereditary.
Yeah, hereditary
rule.
Yes.
And
they grafted that onto Marxism.
That's antithetical to communism.
Yes.
I mean, I know you're not a big fan of communism.
I'm not a big fan of communism either. It is antithetical. That's why I'm mentioning it.
It makes no sense.
It's a weird hybrid. It's taking the Maoist Marxist communism.
It's like the worst of every possible system.
Yes,
kind
that's
of,
exactly
you know,
right.
The greatest misses of governance.
And it's worked out very badly for the people
Horribly.
Of North Korea.
Horrible. Horrible. The only thing that they're really good at is those synchronized displays with the hand cards. Have you seen that? That's fascinating that they can do that.
That's remarkable.
But aside from that, which isn't really that much.
Stuff like food.
Yeah, food.
And they were. And
freedom.
We're on the third generation of Kims running that country.
And each Kim seems to be even worse than the Kim before.
Well, yeah. The middle Kim was, in theory, the worst.
Well.
In this one, we'll see how this shakes out.
I don't know. This one's
this
just
one
getting
could
started,
be the worst.
Though. Yeah.
It's hard. It's a big competition.
It's a bad competition to be involved in if that's your leader.
And the first Kim in the 50s and 60s, when he was running things, actually North Korea, there was a point, and people don't remember this, where North Korea was actually doing better than South Korea immediately following the Korean War.
And South Korea had a bad stretch of poor governance as well, and
Yes.
You know, authoritarianism and all that.
And what happened was North Korea was propped up by a lot of Soviet money. The Soviet Union poured a huge amount of money. Yeah. And then what happened is, as things became tight for the Soviet Union as we head into the 70s and 80s, the Soviet Union was like, well, okay, you're on your own now. And that's when things started to go really bad.
Right. And there were also schisms. There was the Sino-Soviet split, and North Korea was kind of more leaning. It gets very complicated.
It does. It does. And again, I don't feel badly about it. I think that this history is important precisely because the mainstream media doesn't actually tell you much about the history.
Anything, really.
And so what they've done is, and again, at no point here, you know, there's nothing to, I'm not even trying, like, North Korea is a very bad country. I don't know how else to put it. It's a very bad country. And typically what they've done is they act out in order to get something, often food. Often it's a deal, so they get money poured into it. They're like, okay, well, we're going to start a war. And then everyone freaks out and then gives them money. I'm shortening it, obviously.
Right. Well, that's one interpretation. Another interpretation is they're jumpy. They had to move their entire culture, their entire lifestyle underground because they were being bombed so heavily in the 50s, and they're still.
Yeah,
God
but
knows
I'm talking
how much,
since. I'm
know,
talking since then. It's
yeah,
really
well, since then they haven't really recovered from that, and there's like heavy metal pollution, and who knows what that's doing.
Are you talking
to their,
about like? Heavy, like Metallica?
More like, you know, byproducts of bombs.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah, because I don't know. I know some people who
by
really
the way,
like
byproducts of bombs is the best Metallica album. I got to point
I think that's just a bootleg. I don't think you can get that.
You're right. That's a good point.
But, I have some friends who really like Metallica, and they would not like it being called pollution. But anyway, it's a horrible legacy of the Cold War, both the former Soviet Union and the current United States used it, and China used it as a proving ground.
Yeah, China and China as well, yeah.
Yeah, China definitely. And the Korean people suffered for it, and the people in the South are doing much better now. There was a stretch when they were, you know, dealing with kind of a quasi-fascist state, and that was horrible for them. They're doing a lot better now. The people in the North have never gotten over it. And this is still a traumatized people.
The Chinese help. The Chinese helped them.
Well, the Chinese helped them like today, so that they didn't starve to death. I mean, they're basically
Key ally.
They're dependent.
Yes, that's
on China.
Right,
it's like if China were filling out a 1040 tax form, they'd be able to declare North Korea as a dependent. I mean, without China's help, North Korea would be more miserable than it already is.
And that's why the Trump policy towards China, which was interestingly conciliatory at first. Now, so let's play the first clip, which is Trump's statement about North Korea. And this is what freaked everybody out yesterday. Let's hear here's Donald Trump.
North Korea best not make any more threats to the United States. They will be met with fire and fury like the world has never seen. He has been very threatening beyond a normal statement. And as I said, they will be met with fire, fury, and frankly, power, the likes of which this world has never seen before.
Now, again, that's a bold statement, but I've got to say once again, you know, Bill Clinton, let's use him as an example. Bill Clinton also said that if the North Koreans use nukes, they won't have a country anymore.
Well, absolutely. I mean, the idea that a country could use nuclear weapons against anybody and walk away from that, I mean, that's, you know, the only country that ever has is the United States. And since then, nobody has. And ironically, when Trump issued this, you know, like the world has never seen, it was on the anniversary of the Nagasaki bombing, which came right after the Hiroshima bombing that killed at least 129,000 people. So if Trump is upping the ante beyond that, like the world has never seen, that's pretty provocative.
Now, here's the part that people are forgetting from yesterday, which is, and we're going to play the second clip in a second here. The part that people are forgetting is how this came out. What you're hearing on the news is, well, at the beginning of the day yesterday, we found out that North Korea has miniature nuclear weapons that they can put onto an ICBM.
Well, I'd like to qualify that just a little bit. We heard something that to the effect that there's an intelligence estimate that thinks that perhaps that's possible.
Well, let's play the ABC. So here's the clip. This is from ABC News. I want you to listen to this clip.
Let's trace how this happened.
Listen very carefully to what they're actually saying here, because it's significant.
All the more alarming, given the latest extraordinary intelligence assessments of North Korea's nuclear capabilities. First reported in the Washington Post and confirmed by ABC News, U.S. intelligence analysts believe the North can now produce a miniaturized nuclear warhead that can fit inside its missiles, including its intercontinental ballistic missiles.
Okay, so forget the detail at the end there. I want you to listen to the middle part, which is an intelligence estimate originally reported by the Washington Post that ABC confirmed.
Yes.
That's the part that's significant to me. I just want you to think about that. That means that it's not, we don't know this yesterday morning because North Korea made an announcement about it.
Usually North Korea brags about something that they're going to do, and it turns out that they can't even do it. Usually, we find out about it directly from the North Korea. And then, they say, we've got this mighty missile.
Yeah.
It's going to hit Disneyland. And they launch it, and it just kind of falls apart after about a mile or something.
Instead, what we found out about it from is the Washington Post. We've established before, look this up. The Washington Post is a $600 million contract. Forgive me. Not the Washington Post. Gosh, they wouldn't have that.
Oh, no. They would have nothing to do with it.
Amazon,
however,
owned by Jeff Bezos, has a $600 million contract, and Amazon owner Jeff Bezos owns the Washington Post.
So nothing, there's no connection.
There's no connection there at all.
Aside from they're owned by the same guy.
That's right. And so,
I'd say that the connections between the Washington Post and the intelligence community go way deeper than that. And are a lot older than
right.
That
no, but
contract.
that's just the duh one. That's the so obvious
yeah,
one.
Yeah. Well, that's the undeniable. You can look it up on their prospectus.
Now I don't want to underestimate the fact that North Korea also said they would attack Guam. They were very specific about that. North Korea has been. I'm not letting North Korea off the hook in any way.
No.
I'm just pointing out that the way this information came out yesterday morning was in a timed release through the Washington Post, through the IC, and I think that's worth noting.
Yeah, I think that we're being set up here. I think we're getting ready to be buffaloed into some kind of a war like we were in Iraq. And, I don't understand why Trump said what he said when he said it, but this reminds me of the run-up to the Iraq War, and we're going to be talking about a regime change coming up.
Coming up in round two, we'll be talking about the Paul Manafort raid. You're listening to Fault Lines with Nixon and Stranding with guest host Mike Hirsch all week.
Fault Lines. Fault Lines.
We are back with Fault Lines with Nixon and Stranahan with guest host Mike Hirsch all this week, filling in for Garland Nixon, who is on vacation this week, and we miss Garland, and we'll see him back here on Monday. In round two, let's talk about this Paul Manafort thing. So this is interesting to me, and this is unfortunately, again, I'm so thankful that we have 20-minute segments on the show to actually unpack issues. On a lot of radio shows, you've got like 7 minutes, regular terrestrial radio.
It's like speed dating.
I wouldn't know, but I'm sure, okay.
Okay.
Sounds good.
You know what it is.
I don't know much about speed dating. I did marry my first wife 9 days after we met.
Okay.
So that's kind of similar, I guess.
It's a speed engagement, I guess.
I got to point out that was the first wife, so I wouldn't, advise that. I wouldn't advise marrying someone 9 days after you've just met, but
who knows?
But you're young and in love and impetuous, there's no talking you out of it.
Apparently not.
And by the way, I like my ex-wife. I got to point out,
That's good.
I like my ex-wife.
Speaks highly of both of you.
We get along. We have a kid. My son, Shane. So we have a kid. My second wife, who I've been with for about 20 years, it took us longer. I'm just saying. It took us a little bit longer.
Couldn't have taken you shorter. So
no, hardly. It would have been tricky. Now, the reason I like the long segments, though, is because this Paul Manafort thing, there's a lot of misinformation people have about Paul Manafort, and it has to do with the way what I like to call the American propaganda machine works, which is, we just talked about North Korea a little bit. We know how propaganda works in North Korea.
It's pretty blatant.
Yeah, there's one network, and they give you the state spin on events. And so you look at that in America, and you go, well, we don't have that at all. We don't have a propaganda system here at all.
We don't have a single government-run station. What we do have is like seven corporations that dominate.
That's right.
Like 90% of everything you read, hear,
yes,
see on TV. And they're all beholden to the same handful of advertisers, and they have interlocking boards of directors and all that, except for Sputnik.
Yes.
And BBC and Al Jazeera, and there are a few others that are outside that.
Which, by the way, also have their own biases.
Everybody does.
Everybody's got their own biases. So none of this is to say that, okay, well, this is it. This is the objective source.
If anyone says, just listen to me and don't listen to anybody else, they're all lying, I'm the one telling you the truth, run away from them.
Yeah.
What we do here, and what Lee says, and I agree with him completely, is don't take our word for it. Look it up yourself. But don't dismiss Sputnik or any other source just because somebody else tells you to stay away from it.
And understand that people have an agenda. And that's actually one of the reasons I like the format of our show, because we tell you right up front, I'm a Republican, I'm a Democrat. And then within that, there's lots of views. Democrats don't have one view, and neither
do
Republicans.
Certainly not.
But I like the fact that we set that up front. Now, this Manafort thing, the way the American propaganda machine works is you've got 500 channels, but a lot of them are narrative driven. And let me just say this, too, because I've been doing a lot of research. This will veer off for a second, but I'll come right back to the Manafort thing. So I've been doing a lot of research in this McMaster thing, because I've been talking about the Fire McMaster thing and everything else. And last night I said, hold off on calling the White House while this Korea thing's going on. I did a Periscope
about
that.
They might be busy.
I just said, look.
Not the time.
Let's give it a couple of days and see how this shakes out. It's not the time to call to get rid of the National Security Advisor, even though I would partially blame him for the situation we're in.
But he's going to be around for a while, I think.
I don't know.
We'll see.
I don't know about that. So here's what I've noticed, though. I've been doing a lot of research into McMaster. Here's what I've noticed, Mike. So I talk about George Soros a lot, because this is the summer of Soros, where I'm going to talk about him every day, since the media is not talking about him and they talk about Russia every day. But here's what I've noticed that's very interesting. I'm looking into all these military think tanks. Okay, there's the IISS. That's the group that McMaster was with before.
And what's that stand for? Do you know? Offhand?
The International. I forget what it stands for specifically.
Institute for Strategic Studies. Most likely,
I think that's what it is.
You can take like five or six words, like institute, strategic.
Put them in a hat.
Pull three of them out, and then you have a think tank.
So then there's the Potomac Foundation. That's another group he's connected with. Then there's another one called CSIS, which is, again, for strategic something.
Yeah, Council for Strategic something.
So there's all these military think tanks. And then there's the Atlantic Council. And here's what I noticed about them, Mike. This is what's interesting to me. They are all funded by largely three groups. So one of them is a group who you know who Plowshares is, right?
I've heard of them, yeah.
Okay, so Plowshares is a left, I think that's the group, Martin Sheen's done work with them. They're a left-wing group and they promote peace, right? But what's interesting is
it's like beat their swords into Plowshares. I think that's Isaiah.
That's where they got that from. And George Soros, who clearly funds a lot of institutions Center for American Progress, Move On, et cetera, right? That you'd think those people are largely anti-war because they are, right? But here's what's interesting. When I look at these organizations, they're funded by Soros, Open Society, Plowshares, these left groups, and by Lockheed Martin, Raytheon. By the way, midday today, stock prices were lower, but Raytheon and Lockheed Martin were both up. You wonder why.
Can you imagine?
I wonder why.
We'll have to look into that.
But it's very interesting to me that what they do is these supposedly pro-peace groups are connected up with the weapons industry.
Yeah, that's very questionable.
And with big governments, and by the way, with the Department of Defense. So in other words, Bahrain, whatever, I may be adding an extra syllable there, but Bahrain is a major funder of the IISS, but so is the Department of Defense. So here's what I'm saying.
Yeah, I'm just going to say I don't really know independently what Plowshare's involvement is, but for the sake of argument, we'll go ahead and
they're
say
one of, they're one of the funders. And Soros Open Society is clearly one of the funders. And so what I'm saying is at the end of the day, these are people who are all smoking cigars together. Does that make sense?
Well, that's like a common theme that we've had since the show started is keep your eye on the elites, the people who make money from war, people who make money from climate change, people who make money from pollution, people who make money from, Monsanto and Frankenfoods. And the people who are making a lot of money, they spread it around.
The Potomac Foundation was started by basically with big grants from two groups, Soros's Open Society, and then another group that's a Republican group. I forget the name, Seth
right,
Richland.
Right, that's the clever thing that they do.
That's what they do.
There's the Carlyle Group, and there's a bunch of others. And what they'll do is they'll get conservative Democrats and neoconservative Republicans to look like they're bipartisan when really they agree on all these policies that are terrible for most of the American people and most of the world. They're promoting these wars. They're promoting despots. They're promoting regime change.
Yeah.
And Manafort kind of was skating around on some of that.
He absolutely was. So Paul Manafort was the Trump campaign manager. He came in after Corey Lewandowski. And basically the setup there was during the primary, Ted Cruz started to shift his strategy to he realized he wasn't going to win the popular vote in states.
He didn't have a chance.
So he started to play delegate games.
He tried to use insider connections and kind of whisper that Trump couldn't win. And he was like trying to have like a like sneak in.
Yeah, he was going to try to use procedural,
it's chicanery.
It's a semi valid way to win. In other words,
people think that's how Eisenhower beat Taft in the '50s. The insiders rigged the game against Taft, who was a true conservative and a rock rib Republican. And people like Phyllis Schlafly said, she had that book, We Want a Choice, Not an Echo.
Right.
And so that was really kind of the spark of Reaganism in the Republican Party. And Cruz was trying to do the same strategy that they did for Eisenhower.
It's very lawyerly. It's very lawyerly,
too.
It's tricky. And when you're going up against a first-time politician like Donald Trump, you could win.
They felt they could pull a fast one on him. And Trump kind of called on Manafort like a baseball team will call in a closer.
That's right.
They've got a lead, and they just got to close out the game. And so they'll bring somebody in for the last inning or two to be lights out.
And it wasn't because it was an ideological stalwart or anything like that. It's because he knew how the game worked. And I'm not even knocking Paul Manafort when I say this.
They needed somebody who could play those games.
That's exactly right. And that's why they brought in Manafort. Then what happened was, in August, the government of the Ukraine came out and said, hey, Paul Manafort's name was in the secret ledger. Now, subsequently, on June 27th—
It's such a secret ledger that it didn't really even exist.
Well—
That's how secret it was.
Something existed.
Something.
It was dropped by a guy who had met with Alexandra Chalupa. Alexandra Chalupa, we've talked about
before.
That is
his real name. That is the real name.
That is her real name. She's one of the three Chalupa sisters, which sounds like a Coen Brothers film.
It does, or like a sale at Taco Bell.
So there's three Chalupa sisters, Alexandra, Andrea, and Irina. Alexandra worked in the Clinton White House, and she's a DNC operative. Andrea Chalupa is a writer closely connected with the Democrats. Irina Chalupa works for a group in the Ukraine funded by George Soros. Once again, Soros' name keeps coming up here. And Alexandra Chalupa had met with the government of the Ukraine and was looking for dirt on Manafort. So suddenly the secret ledger drops from the government of the Ukraine. And by the way, from a group called NABU, which is the National Anti-Corruption Bureau of the Ukraine, NABU.
You can't make these names up.
You can't make it up. NABU was formed by, it did not just exist. It's not like the FBI that's existed for decades. NABU was formed by the FBI and the EU in 2014, right after the coup that we'll talk about in round three of today's show.
It all comes together.
It all does come together. So this is what happened. So in August, I just had the article up here, but in August 15th, 18th, right around there, all these stories come out that Paul Manafort's name is in the secret ledger. Now, what no one in the media is telling you, but you can look it up yourself, only Bloomberg reported this and one or two other outlets. The Washington Post didn't report it. The New York Times didn't report it. The same prosecutor who said, hey, Paul Manafort's name is in this ledger in August, June 27th, about a month ago, 6 weeks ago, came out and said, oh, hey, Paul Manafort's name isn't in the ledger. So they've now admitted that that was a hoax. And it was put out, like I say, by NABU that was formed by the FBI. And if you want a Comey connection, none of this is conspiratorial. Go look this stuff up yourself.
We challenge you, if anybody who wants to say that this is fake news or whatever, look it up yourself.
And
you
know, so
you can do the same sleuth work that, you know, Lee is pointing you in the right direction.
I'm giving you the date for
just
a reason.
Just go and look it up.
The reason I'm saying it came out on June 27th is Google June 27th Manafort Ukraine secret ledger, and you'll find stories where the same guy, there's an interview. I've watched the interview.
So this isn't Paul Manafort's first brush with investigations.
No, it's not.
And I think, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I think what your position is going to be is that this pre-dawn raid,
yes,
is going to come up with the same thing that the dodgy ledger came up with, which is a big goose egg.
Yes, but here's what it's coming up with today. Huge headlines on CNN and every place else. Paul Manafort raided.
It's very theatrical.
Exactly right. Rated.
And we were talking about the Washington Post. What they're saying is, well, why raid Manafort? And this is what the Washington Post's take on it, and try not to laugh too hard, but say he was Trump's campaign chairman for several months in 2016. Was that like 3 months? I mean, it wasn't a lot.
It wasn't a long time, but
he was in that meeting. Seriously, this is what Washington Post reporting, quote, he was in that meeting with asterisks around the word that when Donald Trump Jr. was told the Russian government was trying to help his father win. So he was at the meeting, supposedly. We might find out that he was, that he wasn't. And this is what the Washington
Post. I'm willing to stipulate he was.
Maybe he was.
So let's go with he was.
Okay. And the Washington Post says, it appears Manafort took detailed notes of that meeting. Now, I don't know how they say that appears, what the appearance of it, but that's what they're going with. And those notes could be key evidence if there are any collusion-related charges.
But
so there's appears that there might be an if.
And here's the thing. The lawyer who we met with was not with the Russian government.
And that, see, you've done this so much. You know, the third point that they make is, he's got lots of ties to Russia. This is one of the papers of record. This is the Washington Post that brought down Nixon,
yes,
Watergate.
That's right.
Back in the day.
That's why it was a good brand for Jeff Bezos to buy.
Well, yeah.
But you know what I'm saying?
He's got lots of ties to Russia.
Because it's got that Watergate.
That Pantia or whatever.
Exactly right. That's exactly why he bought it.
Well, yeah, it has been. And so he's got lots of ties to Russia. I mean, that's such loose.
So here's what
discussion.
Let's be specific. He was a lobbyist for Yanukovych, who's
and they
the
said
former,
that a Russian aluminum magnate.
Right.
And that's magnate, not magnet.
No, thank God.
It's a different thing.
Because a magnet, I don't know, would it stick to aluminum? I'm not sure.
No, because that would be contradictory. And then they say a pro-Russian former Ukrainian president.
And by the way,
that's not Russia.
And by the way, Manafort was not, and go look this up. Manafort was not pro-Russia. Manafort's advice to Yanukovych was back off from Russia and go with the EU. Now, you'll find that in like New York Times stories, but it's buried in the 15th paragraph. So,
and then the third tie with the lots of ties to Russia is a Republican congressman who advocates for close ties between the U.S. and Russia. I advocate for close ties.
That's Dana Rohrabacher. I guarantee you, that's Dana Rohrabacher.
Interesting. And then a business associate from his time in Ukraine who once served in the Russian army. I mean, fifth count of
I don't know if you know this about the Ukraine and Russia, but they're like right next to each other.
They're pretty close.
And in fact, in the Crimea, that's Russia's only warm weather naval base. Right. They've got a base there. And that whole
warm water.
Remember when Russia annexed the Crimea? Remember that?
I was not around, but
okay, but you've heard
it
of it.
It was like in the 1850s.
People talk. No, just recently.
Reacquired it.
What people don't talk about with that is that Russia already had 25,000 troops stationed there because they were there. It's not like they invaded.
That's a whole thing. They were part of the Soviet Union, integral parts of the Soviet
Union.
That's right. It was Russia, and then second to Russia was Ukraine in importance to the
Soviet
Union. That's
right. So after the United States, we'll talk about this in the third round, after the United States engineered a coup in the Ukraine, I'm going to say that again.
But I want to say, we'll get to that, but the fourth reason that the Washington Post reported for this raid was investigators could use him as leverage.
Mm.
There you go. Finally, there's something that I can see that makes some sense.
So let's talk about more of this in round three when we talk about the U.S.'s policy of instituting coups. Again, it's stuff you're not going to get anywhere else.
Nowhere else.
You're listening to Fault Lines with Nixon and Stranahan with guest Mike Hirsch all week.
Fault Lines. Fault Lines.
We are back. You're listening to Fault Lines with Nixon and Stranahan, joined by special guest host Mike Hirsch, communications director of the Progressive Democrats of America, who's with us all week. And by the way, this next segment, Mike named it. Mike, I don't want to say the name.
Yeah, I called it Cuckoo for Coos.
You see why I didn't want to say the name? Look, here's the thing. I'm not saying it's a bad name. I'm just saying I don't want to say it.
Yeah,
that's all I'm saying.
You got to say it right.
Say it again.
You could say it wrong and be cuckoo for coos. I don't know if you were around, but they had
Cocoa Puffs.
They used to have the Cocoa Puffs bird.
I was around for. I don't know how old you think I am,
but
I was around for Cocoa Puffs.
Okay, well, but I don't know how long they had that ad running.
I'm sure.
Yeah,
it was
a bird who, when he saw Cocoa Puffs, would have like a psychotic episode or something and go cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs.
I know two things. I know two things. I know politics and I know pop culture. I know both of those things.
And unfortunately, there's not a lot of difference between the two sometimes.
See, stuff like sports, I know nothing about. But if I get in the right categories in Trivial Pursuit, I am dominant.
Mm-hmm.
But like sports stuff, see, my dad, who's a golf pro, my dad knew the sports stuff.
Oh, okay. So you had to team up with him.
Right. If I teamed up with him, that would be pretty dominant. But I know pop culture and I know politics. Now, let me just finish up on one thing in the last segment about Manafort. I got to point out, and Mike and I were talking about this in the break, that Manafort was raided the morning after he testified in front of the Senate. So my conjecture here is that he told the Senate that he took notes. And that's where my guess is where the Washington Post got it.
Yeah, and I think that that is the reason why they got the warrant to raid. They said he has material evidence that could be destroyed or altered or something. I still think it was theatrical. And I think they're trying to make an example out of him.
Yeah, let me just explain how this smoke and mirrors game works, because this is a very specific way it works. And I'm going to do it with the Ukraine chalupa thing I just mentioned, okay? So if Congress and the media were trying to get the Democrats, or at least what I would call tell the truth about them. And by the Democrats, I mean the Democratic National Committee. I want to be very specific. Let's put that in a box. Here's what they would do. There would be some sort of leak. See, because here's the thing. I mentioned Alexandra Chalupa before. If you look up Alexandra, go to the Washington Post and the New York Times. Look up Alexandra Chalupa, Ukraine. You'll find almost zero stories about her. And the stories that you find defend what she did.
Yeah, I want to point out one of the ways that the mainstream media controls what people think is by not by outright lying about something. They won't say something that's blatantly false and hope you believe it.
Usually
they will just freeze out a story.
That's right.
Ignore it. And if people bring it up, they'll try to say it's crackpot conspiracy theory or, you know, somehow ridicule it. But they basically will try to ignore it, ridicule it, attack it as fake news.
That's right. And so the New York Times and the Washington Post said, for instance, well, this Ukraine thing's totally different from Russia because there's no accusation that Poroshenko, who's the president of Ukraine, knew about this. Well, not so. If you actually read the Politico story.
And here's the other thing,
from
too.
January,
that's the flimsiest excuse. That's like saying, you know, the Godfather, you know, in the movies, I'm not saying this really happens, but the Godfather would say something and then somebody would be rubbed out. You know, especially the part, you know, spoiler alert, when Michael Corleone took over.
Right.
And like all of his adversaries were wiped out. He didn't say, go to the barbershop and shoot this guy in the, you know, in the eye. He didn't have to.
Well,
so the fact, whether he knew specifically or not, he's involved with it.
But let me tell you, Poroshenko actually knew specifically.
Let's see. And so even there.
Right. I'm just saying that in this case, they literally lied about it. And they said, Poroshenko didn't know.
Yeah, I shouldn't say that the mainstream media doesn't lie. They do.
Yeah. If you want to read more about this, go to just type in Ukraine backfire Politico Vogel, V-O-G-L. You'll find the original original story from January. And you'll see that Poroshenko is implicated. By the way, I'm a reporter. So I've actually run down this stuff and I can confirm to you, and I'll have more on this in the coming weeks, that Poroshenko did know about it.
Right. And here's the other thing, too. The mainstream media have high-paid staff, and they do a lot of different things. But one of the things that they don't do is much investigative reporting anymore.
Right. That's exactly right.
You know, what they do is they collect leaks.
That's right.
From friendly insiders, and they're basically—
That pushes specific agenda.
They're a tool of the elite.
That's right. And so the way it works is you've got, on an above-ground public level, you've got public hearings.
Right.
From
which
House and the Senate.
Everybody can see.
Right. And we know that there's a number of senators, Schumer, let's say, Pelosi on the House side, who are towing the DNC line, right? So what will happen is they'll get a leak from somebody in the IC to the Washington Post. The Washington Post will then run a story. Then Chuck Schumer will comment, or Adam Schiff will comment on the story and go, well, we need to look into this. So then the Washington Post reports on Schumer's comment. Then John McCain will jump in. Then the Post and the Times will go, look, even Republicans agree.
Right, right. There's a whole process. Like there's like a recipe of how they bake the news.
And then when they call a hearing— Even if nothing comes out of the hearing, they find something.
There's always something that they can say.
That's right. And then they say, well, look, there's this thing. Then Schumer comments. Then McCain comments. Then Trump goes, this is a witch hunt. Then the media mocks Trump for saying it's a witch hunt. This is the way it goes.
And here's the thing. That's absolutely how it goes, but it's not a left-right thing.
No, that's why I brought up McCain.
It's all about how to engineer profits for the military-industrial complex, the prison-industrial complex.
Well, and that's why I say it's a DNC. It's a DNC thing, and that's why I want to point out the CIA contract that Amazon has and that Amazon owns the Washington Post, because what happened was when you investigate this, for instance, all the claims about Russian hacking, go to the Washington Post, look up Russian hacking, find out how many stories Ellen Nakashima wrote.
Yeah,
she's the one who did the initial thing. She's the reporter on all of these stories. Find out, when you look into Ukraine, how many stories Michael Weiss wrote. Michael Weiss, Used to be at
And another thing,
BuzzFeed,
too,
is he's now at CNN.
Another thing is this is not left-right because the Bush White House with Karl Rove were experts at manipulating the media, especially doing things that the mainstream media wanted to do, like rush into war with Iraq, where we're talking about regime change. We're going to get to that, we promise. But, you know, Judith Miller basically writing story after story about how Iraq had this, Iraq had that. And later on, her editor said we were afraid to fact check her.
Right.
And this is the New York Times.
Right. But and when I was the lead investigative reporter at Breitbart, I quit. The reason I ended up behind this microphone is I had to quit Breitbart because they wanted me to stop going to the White House to ask questions about CrowdStrike. Breitbart is now talking about stuff on McMaster that I was talking about 2 months ago. And even and here's the thing. I could be a conspiracy theorist and go, there's, you know, someone pulling the strings. There's one. It's not that. It's not like there's someone pulling the strings.
They don't even have to have meetings where they go over it. They all have common interests.
That's right.
And in their pursuit of the common interest, which is number one, keeping the American public scared and desperate and confused so they can do whatever they want to us and get us, you know, get me blaming you and you blaming me. That's what they really want us to do. They want left the people on the left to blame the people on the right and the people on the right to blame the people on the left and go chasing after minorities and gay people and immigrants and white supremacists, whatever.
And all conservative. These things I mean, going I just want to say it goes in all different directions.
However, we're all getting our pockets picked. And we're all getting ripped off and manipulated. And our lives are even put at risk with these regime change policies and these other things that nobody really support.
Well, we should talk about some other time because you bring up the LGBT thing. I got to tell you, most Trump supporters don't care anything.
Well, Trump himself
specifically
doesn't care.
There's certain things they don't like the idea, for instance, the bakery would get sued for $500,000 or whatever. They might not like that.
But it's an attractive distraction that will confuse people from the fact that they're getting screwed over by their credit card company or their mortgage company or
Goldman Sachs or something. We've set up enough of this. Let's just talk about the coup thing. And let's talk about the Ukraine coup because it's very specific. Now, I want to play for you a clip. This happened. You got to remember the setup to the Ukraine thing. The U.S. State Department, John McCain, under Obama, U.S. State Department, John McCain, George Soros funded $100 million by his own. Soros brags about it. He's got a group called International Renaissance. Look it up. It's a Soros-funded group in Ukraine.
Let's hear the clip.
They'd pushed this protest movement in the Ukraine. Now, what you're going to hear, this is before the coup happened. This is two people. It's Victoria Nuland, who's a former Clinton. She's a Clinton confidant, very close to Hillary Clinton. And Gregory Payat, who was the ambassador to Ukraine. Listen to this phone call that came out. And I got to say this again. Before the coup happened. That's what this phone call is. 2014.
What do you think?
I think we're in play. The Klitschko piece is obviously the complicated electron here, especially the announcement of him as deputy prime minister. And you've seen some of my notes on the troubles in the marriage right now. So we're trying to get a read really fast on where he is on this stuff. But I think your argument to him, which you'll need to make, I think that's the next phone call we want to set up, is exactly the one you made to Yats. And I'm glad you sort of put him on the spot on where he fits in this scenario. And I'm very glad he said what he said in response.
Good. So I don't think Cleach should go into the government. I don't think it's necessary. I don't think it's a good idea.
So that's U.S. officials engineering who's going to be in the government. She mentions Yats. She wants Yats in there. Yats is the guy who, when the coup happens, ends up becoming the prime minister. So this is the U.S. government picking who's going to be in charge. And you can hear her going, I don't think this guy should be part of the government.
This is like lifting up the hood and seeing how the engine works. And this is the regime change engine. And it's happened under Democrats and Republicans. The reason that I chose this topic was that the British role in pushing for the 1953 coup in Iran is just coming to light. And the British for a long time tried to cover that up. What happened was there was a democratically elected prime minister in Iran, very popular with the people. And one of the things he wanted to do was negotiate a better deal on the oil that the West was getting. And we hear all this stuff about we want to set up democracies and promote freedom. No, it's really not about that. It's about—
like we've done in Saudi Arabia.
Well, exactly. It's about getting oil at a steady flow at the lowest price that we can negotiate. And the Iranian prime minister said, we can get more money, give us more money. And they said, well, how about this? We're going to topple your regime and we're going to put in a Shah. And then when that Shah died, his son came in, who was not even as good of a leader as that Shah. And he used torture, and the CIA was involved in torturing the Iranian people. And the American people just hear Iran one day went crazy and grabbed some hostages for no reason. We were just minding our own business. Truth is, there were CIA agents operating who were seized. The Iranian hostage crisis. I'm not defending Iran for doing that. It was the wrong thing to do. However, the idea that we did regime change in Iran and threw out their democratically elected government dwarfs the hostage crisis in importance. And now we're talking about having another regime change in Iran. It's like 1953, 2017. I guess it's time. It's like changing like a long-lasting light bulb or something. And, it's not right. You don't go in and overthrow democratically elected governments or even less than democratically elected governments. Number one, because the result is unpredictable. Number two, because it kills a lot of the people in their country. And usually the pretext is they're being mean to their people. So what do? Well, let's bomb their people. That's not what they're asking for. And the idea of having a rerun of another coup in Iran is just so staggering to me. And I can understand why the British wanted to cover up their role in encouraging the 53 coup under Tony Blair, under Labor, working with George W. Bush, they did regime change in Iraq, which empowered Iran and made Iran much more of a regional power than it was before when Iraq was a counterbalance to Iran. What you have is these people basically swinging hammers at random and breaking things up and hoping that things will come out better. They don't come out better.
It's not. I would argue it's not random.
It's nearly random.
I would argue that they know what they're doing.
They know what they want to accomplish.
Right. That's what I'm saying. I'm saying that they have something in mind. Like I'll use the example of Libya. Libya is a failed state. Libya being a failed state means that the oil. Same thing with Syria right now. Syria's effectively, here's what happened. When the Arab Spring started up, the United States started picking winners and losers, and they were doing it in conjunction with the Saudis.
I would say the United States has been picking winners and losers long before
that. No, I agree. I'm just saying that specifically, like Syria, what led to Syria was the Arab Spring starts up, which, by the way, when it started in Tunisia with the guy who owned the food cart—
right.
That guy's later said, I regret what happened. I think that was legitimate. I think there were, people in the Middle East clearly want change. The people. And so what they've done is they fomented these revolutions. And we were doing that. The United States, Hillary Clinton set up something called Civil Society 2.0. It was a way to teach demonstrators to use technology. It was 6 months before the Arab Spring and was before Ukraine. And they did these thing called tech camps.
I just want to stress
where they
that,
taught
that,
people.
That Hillary Clinton has been involved in a lot of regime change and she's planning on regime change in Iran. But it's not just her, it's the neocon philosophy.
No, 100%, yes.
And the neocon philosophy is we know better than the people themselves what's good for them. And then the other side of it, what's good for them is we get their stuff cheap. And basically screw whatever happens to them and screw whatever they want. And it tends to work out badly, not only for the people in the countries, but also in the medium and long run for the United States. It usually turns out badly for us.
And see, this is what I'm saying. They've learned to sell it on both the left and the right in ways that appeal to people who are on the left and the right.
Well, definitely the center and some people on the right. Libertarians are skeptical of it, and most people on the left are very skeptical of it.
But forget skeptical, because here's what I'm getting at. What they've learned is, and they learned this from people like George Lakoff, a very influential framing guy, mm-hmm. right? What they've learned is, if you want to sell something to the right, use things like American exceptionalism, patriotism, strength, right? If you want to sell things to the left, you use like, we're helping people of color,
right.
We're helping, that's what I'm getting at.
That's the scam.
That's what I'm saying.
We're going after Saddam Hussein because he's terrible to his own people. They didn't care.
That's right.
That he's
after Bashar al-Assad.
Because he's terrible to his own people. Turns out he probably didn't use, there's no evidence that he didn't. He probably didn't.
That's right. And that's what I'm saying, is that they've learned on the left and the right. Soros is a guy who's learned, and by the way, because he funds so much of the left institutionally, as does the Ford Foundation, the MacArthur Foundation, all these other groups, people learn to kowtow if they want to get a grant.
Right.
People have learned, but I got to say this, on both the left and the right, they've learned how to write the grants to get them. Does that make sense?
And my sense is that those aren't people on the left. Those are people that are on the left edge of the middle. The people who are on the left are kind of frozen out because we don't play with them.
Yes. I will eventually convince you that I'm right on this, Mike.
We have two more days
to try. Till next time, till tomorrow, you are listening to the most disruptive radio show in America. It's Fault Lines with Nixon and Stranahan, guest hosted all this week by Mike Hirsch. See you tomorrow.